Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. It's a great time to live in Mississippi, and we're talking about it. Welcome to the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. Hope you're having a great day as we continue to celebrate all the people working across this great state to make this a better place to live, work, and play. Hey, listen, I've had a string of terrific guests recently, and I want to thank you for the continued great feedback. I want to bring your attention to the conversation I had yesterday with Paige Roberts, where we talked about the Mayberry Network. I thought that was just a great way to talk about it, that Coastal Mississippi, while it's this big region, it's a collection of small communities. And just because you are talking about something in Hancock County doesn't mean they don't have somebody they're involved with in the community or a relative that lives in Goshen. So the point is, we're all like 1 or 2 degrees away from one another. It's a really small community. And that, you know, we went on to say that, you know, that's one of the things that makes us so valuable, because we're a very well-connected network. People who come into this community and don't get that, they sometimes actually get eaten alive by that reality. They don't realize that the person they're talking to's cousin is running the Board of Supervisors over in Jackson County. So you just don't know. And the other point is that if you always keep in front of you this notion that you're not going to burn bridges, that that what goes around comes around, you may disagree on this issue, but you may not disagree on the next issue. Don't burn bridges. People who burn bridges in coastal Mississippi, or really in the state for that matter, it usually doesn't turn out very well for them in the end. So anyway, it was a good conversation. I want to bring your attention to that. Now I'm thrilled to have the Secretary of State for the state of Mississippi, Michael Watson, somebody who's been on this show many, many, many times. And I've been looking forward to visiting with him, because we have a flurry of activity happening in Jackson as we speak. Michael, how you been?
Man, I've been well, Ricky. Just busy, as you mentioned there. The legislators are in Jackson and at the Capitol. So we've got several issues we're working on over there, and obviously watching other big issues that are on the table. And as you've mentioned before, this is a huge legislative session with a bunch of big ticket items on the table.
It really is. I saw you sort of nodding with a smile as I talked about the Mayberry Network, the way Paige referred to it. But as a former senator, someone who's connected to lots of people in coastal Mississippi, that's a really good description, isn't it?
It's fantastic. And I would tell you, I would extend that on through the state. I remember when I was campaigning back in 19, being up in Northeast Mississippi, and they may look at you a little bit differently because you're from the coast. But at the end of the day, we all want what's best for our communities, what's best for our families. And we recognize that in Mississippi. And just the hospitality state is real. And people welcome you in and offering you sweet tea and talking about their issues and how we can be better friends and work together. It's a beautiful state. And the coast is special. Obviously, I'm from there and partial to the coast. But the entire state is just a special place.
Yeah, the way I would refer to you is you're an ambassador for coastal Mississippi, because you know, you represent the whole state of Mississippi. And for so long, you know this, that not having statewide office holders from coastal Mississippi was a bit of a burden, because we didn't have someone who was in a statewide office that could go and dispel myths in the other parts of the state. And you've taken that on as really a mission of yours to say, hey, man, the coast is an economic engine. We got to support the coast. There are other economic engines in places like the Golden Triangle and so on. We all share so much in common, and you're in a position now where you can actually say that, aren't you?
Really, you know, and as we talked about from the campaign, the first statewide elected official from the coast in 20 years. And I think when you get to that seat at the table and you have those conversations, people recognize, you know what, I really do like the coast. And I love the story that's happening at the coast. I love the economy that's being driven at the coast. I love everything about it. And so it's been good for us to have somebody really to tell that story across the state. And people recognize it. They enjoy the coast. They love coming here. So we'll continue to be a centerpiece for the entire state.
Listen, we're going to get to this in a second, but I'll just mention that the Tidelands responsibilities that the Secretary of State's office has is something that's we're all talking about now because of some legislation that is pending and a challenge by the city of Biloxi, a Supreme Court ruling. We'll come back to all that in just a second. We may actually end the conversation today just getting into that. But I wanted to kind of take a step up from that for just a second. You know, you've been through several legislative sessions. The reality of this particular legislative session is we have a new speaker. At the beginning, you usually have a bit of a lull, and bills are getting filed, but I would say that Delbert and White came to the table ready to roll their sleeves up, and it's been a flurry of activity with Medicaid expansion, the state retirement system, $1 billion economic development projects that have financial incentives attached to them. The state budget, and I mean, the list goes on and on. I don't know that I've, in a long, long, long time, maybe since Katrina, frankly, I don't know that I've seen where there's this many flurries of activity of big issues happening simultaneously. What's your perspective on that?
That's a great point. And during my 12 years in the state Senate, I don't remember tackling this many big topics. And I would say I would caution folks, once you get that many big topics on the table, sometimes things tend to fall apart when folks don't march in the same direction. And when that happens, everything tends to fall apart. So I hope that our legislators are paying close attention to all the details of every topic. And when you have so many big things, it takes such a big team to put them together that makes sure everybody's looking at every angle. And I give a lot of credit to Speaker White. He's a good man. I'm a big fan of his. We don't always agree on everything, and that's just typically how things work. I appreciate your Lieutenant Governor being aggressive as well. And I think that's a good thing to have a vision. And Mississippi is a beautiful place. And sometimes we don't all agree on everything. But at least somebody comes to the table with some ideas that they can then really parse out through the legislative process.
You know, the early conversations that I've had with a number of people about the new speaker, Jason White, is that he is a multitasker, that his ability to compartmentalize. I think of, as a former CEO, I would think about how I would talk about running a business as a CEO. And that is you have so many different initiatives that you may be dealing with, both externally and internally. And you have to be able to take in a bunch of stuff and be able to, you got to do your homework. So you have to work around the clock. And you can't fake it. You got to be the guy that can really begin to talk about the issues. Okay, what I've heard about Jason White is he's that kind of guy, that he's a hard worker. He's smart as hell. He's able to compartmentalize, and that he came in with his sleeves rolled up. And what I just heard you say, it sounds like you see that same kind of Jason White.
I do, and working with him in the legislature back when I was there, just getting to know him as a person, I can't speak highly enough about Jason. And again, I think what you see there is a delegation. You've got to have a strong team around you. There's no way in the world, for instance, me at the Secretary of State's office, if I didn't have Carla Thornhill and the list goes on of all the folks around me to help me execute my job, I couldn't do it. And the same thing goes for the legislature. You've got to build a good team.
Yeah. So, I would say, too, this is an interesting, just another kind of dimension to all this. You look at Delbert Hoseman. Delbert Hoseman, for people who don't understand this, he had a long career as a tax lawyer. This guy is a numbers guy. He was a gifted lawyer. He's a gifted lawyer today, a gifted numbers guy. He's got a good staff. He is a guy who's willing to roll his sleeves up and get into the details. In fact, he's going to get deep into the details. This is not a guy that's leading from a distance. He is focused on every single detail. And I don't know if we are how Lieutenant Governor burned the midnight oil as much as Delbert Hoseman doing right now, just because he's so darn involved. But you've got two legislative leaders now that are digging in big time to try to make something happen. Now, as you pointed out, the big risk in that, and this is true any legislative session for any legislature in the country, and it's true for Congress too, that if you try to bite too much off, then, as time goes on, factions start creating and you get rift and you get miscommunication and you get adjustments that need to be made. It's hard to communicate about complicated bills when everything's moving fast. And by the way, you're barreling toward a deadline for next Tuesday to get stuff out of committee. So it's a big deal, isn't it?
Oh, look, therein lies the problem. You've got to have people around you that you trust, that are honest, that can really say, hey, look, you take this issue. I want you to run point on this. Keep me obviously in constant contact so I know exactly what's going on with that issue. And if you don't have that and you don't have honest brokers at the Capitol, you get yourself in trouble really quickly. So I think that's a big part of making sure, again, with this many big ticket items, you've got to have a great team that understands every moving piece that's honest about it and gives you a great picture as a leader. Hey, here's the direction in which it's going. If you don't like that, you better tell me now, because we got a lot of work to do in a short amount of time.
Wow. So it's really dynamic. It's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. That is for sure. Let's just talk about elections for just a second. Anything in the legislature related to that you're pursuing?
Yeah, we do have a big ticket over there. One of the items that people are talking about are campaign finance reform. As you know, last year that got a little bit sideways in the news with the lieutenant governor's race and some other pieces that are out there with campaign finance. So we actually put a plan together that's a comprehensive reform piece of legislation dealing with campaign finance reform. And I know the legislative leadership has met with different parties who have a role in that. But as I see it now, that would basically take all the administrative and enforcement piece, put it in our office, which is a good thing to have that consistency without having three different bodies, ethics, the AG's office, and our office, where papers can get dropped, where ideas can get dropped. But you get the picture.
Yeah, let's do this. Actually, we'll pick it up right there on the other side, because this is actually really important. You and I talked a lot about it. Delbert Hoseman and I talked a lot about it on the wake of that really tough election cycle. This is something we really need to address in the state. We'll come back on the other side. We'll continue our conversation with Secretary of State Michael Watson. We'll see you after this.
Passion and love for Mississippi is why he's here. This is the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. I have my friend Secretary of State Michael Watson. And by the way, I meant to say at the beginning of the show that I welcome our listeners from the Jackson metro area and from the Mississippi Delta, along with the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And I appreciate the opportunity to visit with the Secretary of State over the entire show today. It's a great opportunity to talk about what's going on. When we went to break, though, we were talking about campaign finance reform. And by the way, we've seen this as an issue in Mississippi for some time, to be quite honest with you. But you've got PAC money and all this different stuff coming in from outside the area that's getting involved in the campaign. You don't know really who's behind it, where the money's coming from. And it's so frustrating in the moment in the election cycle. It's so frustrating to watch that happen. We didn't have good laws in the state of Mississippi to have one entity responsible for accountability around those, and that was part of the problem, right, Michael? You had three different agencies that might have some responsibility, but there wasn't like the chief responsible for campaign finance reform in Mississippi. So why don't you give people a little bit more of a sense of why this was necessary and what some of the confusion was and what might come out of this?
Sure, sure. And if you start there kind of at the outset, like you just mentioned, it was a bit disjointed. You had the Attorney General's office, you had our office, and you also had the Ethics Commission. And so we would get the reports. If something was wrong, then it would go to Ethics, and then Ethics would say, yeah, this is wrong. There's a criminal component or got to collect some money, then it's got to go to the AG's office. So it really was a bit disjointed. So what we have done is put a system together where it would all be under one roof, and that would be ours. There are some appeal pieces that could go to Ethics, but for the main point of this whole conversation, everything would be under the Secretary of State's office. One of the most important pieces, Ricky, you mentioned the PACs there. We saw last year $10 million come through that was washed between PACs. When I say washed, obviously you've got money coming in from the outside going to a PAC who then gives it to another PAC who then gives it to another PAC and then gives it to the campaign or the committee. So you don't know where it came from to start. You got to chase it all the way back, you know, through the winding road. So we had initially banned PAC-to-PAC contributions in our legislation. Unfortunately, that has been pulled out. One of the other big pieces I think is really important that all Mississippians should support, it's just common sense. Every single elected official would have to file their campaign finance report online with our office. So what you see now is the state level, as well as district officials, they file with us. But your mayors, your city council members, your board of supervisors, those other individuals, they don't file with us. They file at the county level, and it's supposed to be transmitted to us, but many times we never get that. So it's really hard for people to track those giving amounts and who's giving what to whom at the local level. So our new system would be a statewide system, very easily searchable like the FEC is now, if you've ever been on their website. and also would include every single elected official in the state. So that was pulled out in committee in the Senate. We're hoping to get that put back in, but that's one of the really big pieces. And then lastly, again, the enforcement mechanisms, very cleanly and clearly spelled out in law. One of the comments made by the governor recently was that didn't want it to be weaponized at the Secretary of State's office. Well, when you explain it on the front end, everybody knows the rules. You either broke it or you didn't. And so, yeah. And if you did break it, here's the fine. Here's the enforcement mechanism. So I think it should be very clean. And Mississippians should demand such to have more accountability of our elected officials.
I definitely agree with that. Listen, on this pack-to-pack thing, I'm just actually disappointed to see that that got pulled out. But what is a rational reason why we should accept a pack-to-pack contribution?
I don't know. good question. So sometimes you see and I'm not picking on him, but just as an explanation, I know Philip Gunn had a big pack, Speaker's Leadership Pack, and I know Speaker White now has one. So sometimes you see the packs like the bankers or realtors or whomever would give to that larger pack, and then he would give it to members depending on who had tough races. So I think that's kind of where they were concerned. But again, that pack could give directly to that campaigner or that candidate, and you wouldn't have any questions then of where the money came from and who it went to. And I think that's the important piece. Again, accountability is the key.
What we're talking about, and I would think that the governor actually would want to be for this, because obviously this recent position that he has is, being reelected to governor of Mississippi is not his last time in political office. So, he may be a senator someday. I don't, it'd be interesting to see where Tate Reeves goes from here. But let's go back to the Delbert-Hoseman race, where it was just a crazy amount of pack-to-pack, and you couldn't trace it. And what happens when a pack-to-pack-to-pack scenario happens, then outlandish claims can be made, and all kinds of stuff can happen. And in the moment, Delbert-Hoseman campaign can do is make a complaint to your office, can make a complaint to the Ethics Committee, even to the AG. But there's nothing they can immediately do about it. It's just like, okay, the complaints are made, but it still happens. And then, another set of commercials comes out. It's hard to watch. I'm not ever going to be in politics, but if I were in politics, it would be super frustrating to me to not really appreciate where my opposition's coming from. And that's what we're really trying to figure out, isn't it?
It is. And that's one of the pieces that I think you will see the clarity in putting some teeth in campaign finance reporting. And if you don't have those teeth, then obviously who cares? I'm going to look the other way. I'm going to do it again later on down the road. I will push back a little bit on the one that happened this past year. That was some corporate giving. Obviously, anything over $1,000, you can't do that in Mississippi. There was some interesting, readings of the statute or lack thereof, basically on the history of how that's been applied. And so there was some issues that could have been handled that weren't. That said, again, once you have it in clear statutory authority, who's supposed to do what, and you have some teeth in it. And I think that's the big thing that we want to make sure we're doing.
Well, so would that have been the AG's office, Michael?
Perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think it's just important to get clarity. I mean, you want fair campaigns. And look, we live in a brutal campaign world today. I don't know how. I don't envy you at all. I don't envy Tate Reeves at all. I don't envy Delbert Hoseman. I don't envy any of you guys. To be in public office today, especially in the world of social media and the amount of money that gets poured into these campaigns around specific issues, it can be so brutal. And if you don't have super thick skin, I've talked to just about all the people that I've mentioned, and the personal price you pay, your family pays, aside from, trying to get into the office and whatever, but just the personal price you pay, it sometimes to me doesn't seem worth it. But you're so committed to doing what you're doing that you just take it. If there's something we can do with campaign finance reform that can make that somewhat better, at least more accountability around it, I think that's going to help. That's going to help in the long run. I mean, we still got a lot more reforms that are necessary eventually, and a lot of those are just societal. But the reality is, to create more accountability will be a good thing, won't it?
Completely agree. And I'll tell you this, if I didn't feel like it was something that the Lord had for me to do, I wouldn't be here. It is brutal. It's tough. And especially when you get folks who just are careless with the truth. They don't care if it's true or not. If it's going to help them win a race, then they'll say it. And I do think if you get more accountability and more framework in there, then perhaps more people that are good-natured, good individuals will step up to the plate to run. And the more we can do to help that, I think we're on the right track.
Well, listen, as a former newspaper publisher and media CEO for 16 years before I got into this gig, and I'm very independent. I'm willing to get into the issues if I need to. And I know what really good attacks look like. when you have a show like this, or you're a publisher of a newspaper, you're a public figure just like you are. I'm there in a corporate role in the media side. You're there as elected official, but the attacks can be very specific and very brutal and very unfair, to be quite honest with you. I personally don't ever take it too personally, because I've just been conditioned to it. But if you're an elected official, though, man, it can come from so many different directions. I don't have to run to be on this show. I'm here because I have a great relationship with Super Talk Mississippi Media, but you have to run. So you have to overcome the negativity that's said about you and whatever. And I know that's no fun, man. I know that. I think you probably would much rather enjoy what you're doing, enjoy making things better, enjoy visiting with people, traveling this state and traveling outside this state and bragging about this state and not dealing with all this noise.
It's a lot of noise. And I'll tell you this, look, again, like the Secretary of State's race, for example, the first one we ran, when we found out we had an opponent, Lauren called and she said, look, are you worried? And I said, look, if I'm supposed to be the Secretary of State, I'm going to be the Secretary of State. And I firmly believe that. And no matter what negative ads come out, if I'm supposed to be the next whatever, and that's what the Lord has in store, then I'm going to be it. And so I try to look at it as a business, but I do care much for my family, and I hate that they have to see those type things.
Hey, listen, Michael, that's kind of, when people ask me when I was in the thick of it, they would say, man, how do you take that incoming? I said, you know what, man, at the end of the day, I've never lost a sense of my values. First of all, I have faith in God. And secondly, I have incredible connection to my wife and my kids and my family. And I always viewed them as sort of my moat, So when I wasn't at work, man, I got inside my moat and nobody could penetrate that. And you feel the same way, don't you?
That's great. That's a great way to look at it. And God bless Lauren and the girls. They keep me grounded. Always remind me, hey, nobody knows who you are. Just get out there and do your job. So that's an important check on reality.
It really is. When we come back on the other side, we'll continue our conversation with Michael Watson. We'll see you after this break.
Living in this great state of Mississippi. It's the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio. I have Michael Watson, the Secretary of State, been on the show many, many times. I enjoy the conversation we just had around campaign finance reform, because I think sometimes we get so bogged down with the mechanisms related to the legislation that we forget about the human side of it all. To be in public life, I don't care if you're a councilman in Biloxi or a member of the Jackson County Chamber, Board of Supervisors, or if you're in Tupelo and you're the mayor, or you're a statewide office holder, or any point in between. It takes a toll personally to do these gigs. You're not on your schedule anymore. You're on your constituent schedule. And when you have a legislative session going on like we are now, to be in Tate Reeves' position or Michael Watson's position or any other of these statewide officials, there's a lot to say grace over. There's a lot happening right now in our state capital. That is for sure. So we talked about campaign finance reform. Before we get into the Tidelands issue, anything else you guys are looking at?
you know, really just some cleanup language from different statutes. And we've got a big focus, as you well know, on cutting the regulatory burden. So really focus on that piece. And I think that impacts more Mississippians than anybody could ever imagine. And it's more than just the theory piece and the policy piece. It's actually putting food on people's table. When you can cut regulations or we can navigate them and people start their business and they can feed their families and grow their communities, that's real life. And that's when the transition from just policy pie in the sky gets down to the kitchen table. And that's what really makes my heart tick and really enjoy what I do.
Well, Michael, I remember well these conversations that you and I had about the regulatory piece. And so let me explain it the way that I would explain it from the world that I was in. And for anyone who's listening, you can appreciate what Michael Watson is saying when he said they've been working on the regulatory piece. When I was working in the corporate world, Knight Ridder, the company that owned the Sun Herald, was the second largest newspaper company in America, 20-something thousand employees, 31 newspaper companies in some of the largest markets in the country, including, of course, the Sun Herald. I was involved in what is called a re-engineering project, and what we is new technologies were starting to be made available to us. It meant we had to go in and begin to really understand how we were going to find economies of scale in our infrastructure, how we were going to find economies of scale in our operations. And essentially what it meant was that if you go into a company, over the years, certain procedures happen and certain processes happen in certain ways that they do business. It was never actually planned to be that way. What happened is certain people came along and then another person came along. And what happens is these rules and regulations and processes get clunky over time. And they create, I would compare it to like a snowball going down the hill. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. At some point, and a lot of companies don't do this, incidentally, but more are doing it today because technology enables it. At some point, you got to say, whoa, stop. Let's look at where we are right now, and then let's look at where we could be. And then when you really get an understanding of where you could be based on where we are right now, then you can say, you know what? We need to start writing some master plans to move from that to this. And that's what Michael did. He went into the Secretary of State's office and began to look at all these rules and regulations that had been snowballing down the hill for I can't tell you how many years, and started reengineering the process and finding a way to make it easier. In some cases, you could eliminate regulations. In some cases, it meant streamlining the regulation. But the goal was to make it easier for us as citizens to navigate through that. Is that essentially the way you would describe it?
That's exactly it. And I love the analogy there, the snowball down the hill, and it gets clunky. And people just think, well, that's just the way it's supposed to be. No, it's not. And I think that's our job as elected officials to listen to our constituents and to say, hey, let me get out of the way. And by the way, I'm going to take these regulations with me. And I'm not anti-regulation. If it's good regulation, if it's smart, if it's public health, if it's public safety, I get it. But to get government out of your hair as often as possible is something that's really important to me, and making sure that you can flourish in your business and, again, provide for your family and build your communities. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a similar conversation with Sean Tindall, public service safety guy for head of Mississippi. And he was talking about just driver, you know, go get driver's license, you know, or go get tags. I mean, it's not tags, excuse me, just driver's license. But it was sometimes people would go there and wait and wait and wait, and they had to do a lot of work to kind of streamline that to make it more customer focused, and they did a pretty good job at that. So, yeah, it's good to see that we're applying those standards. But what you did, I remember we spent the whole show talking about it. It was an extremely heavy lift. It required you to travel, I think, to every county in the state before it was over with. So you were pretty dedicated to that. Hey, listen, Thailand's issue, for people who are not from coastal Mississippi, they can't fully appreciate it. So why don't you kind of give them the short version of the role that the Secretary of State plays traditionally as it relates to tidelands here in coastal Mississippi?
Yeah, so very, very high level. Basically, when Mississippi became a state, the federal government gave us the public trust tidelands to go along with it and placed it in trust for all Mississippians to use. And so when you think about it, if you come to the coast and you see a casino or a restaurant or any other commercial use and other types of uses along the coast, out in the water or along where there's not the sand beach, but pieces along the water, you know those folks are having to pay a lease to the state to use those public trust tidelands because the state owns that. So it's important for us to then turn the money back to the coast, the lower six counties, to make sure that we're preserving our coast, but also for public access. And I like to remind folks, no matter if you're from Belmont or Biloxi, you have the same authority to use those public trust islands. Those are for all citizens of Mississippi, not just the coast. And sometimes, you know, being from the coast and understanding tidelands, that gets a little bit hard because people from the coast want to say, wait a minute, those are ours. But they're not. Actually, the state owns those tidelands. And that's kind of where the rub comes in.
So what happened along the way, there was a bit of a conflict with the city of Biloxi. And why don't you describe specifically what that was? And we don't have time to get into all the nuts and bolts, but at the end of the day, it went to the Supreme Court. They ruled. But why don't you kind of give like the elevator speech on what that situation was?
Yeah. So real quickly, the RW development case was one that's incredibly interesting. I still think it was wrongly decided, but that's me. We all have our opinions. So basically, it allowed Biloxi to travel through 5915-1 is the Small Craft Harbor Act, and that's in legislation. And there's a word in there that was taken out of context, in my opinion, reclamation. So basically what happened was there was a pier built prior to some hurricane damage, and it was never rebuilt. And so Biloxi came in and said, RW Development came in and said, well, you know, Biloxi is going to reclaim that, and then we're going to sign a lease with them to give us access to Water's Edge. But the idea was this is simply for a handicap accessible pier for all the public to enjoy, never for a casino. Well, I mean, I'm winking for those that can't see me. This was never for a casino. So the case is decided. And by the way, we had offered several times rent-exempt leases for this pier. But again, this wasn't about the pier. This was about money. This was about a casino. And so the local judge basically said, look, reclamation, by reclamation, Biloxi's claiming that. Well, she over, in my opinion, overused that term reclamation of its historical context and used it improperly, in my opinion. Goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court does a couple of things. One, they say, yeah, that reclamation works. Number two, the state, because we had never done and enforced a lease there, and that we were stopped from doing so. And by the way, that changed history and a long history and case law of estoppel. And then they made a different decision about 6 weeks later in another case, which completely conflicted that. So something was really odd about this one. But long story short, there never should have been a casino along Public Sand Beach. And back in the day when this thing was originally decided, you were present there for this conversation. But after Katrina, when the casinos were moved or allowed to move on land, the idea was they had to have a waterborne across on the tidelands location for them to be able to move on shore. And if you had that, then that gave you the ability to go 800 foot on. So that's historical context is really important. So this one, again, you build a pier across a sand beach. You then have access to Water's Edge, which is, by the way, the Mississippi Gaming Commission requires you to have access to Water's Edge to have a casino. And so they completely, in my opinion, misused the law. Well, that then gave a springboard to the Mississippi Gaming Commission to authorize a location for a casino, a new casino. And we hear this argument now that, you know, the other casinos are just being anti-competitive. I want to remind folks, there are 17 locations that are currently legal for new casinos. So this isn't about anti-competitive. That's malarkey. You know, there are 17 locations. So there can be more casinos at legal sites. And so what this is, in my opinion, it turned a not legal site into a site that the Gaming Commission gave them the ability to locate a casino. And that's where we are with RW Development. But at the end of the day, what this is about is these local cities can get a lease from the state, rent exempt, by the way. They then get their small craft harbors, and this legislation would actually empower them more so than they are today if it is passed.
What we'll do when we come back on the other side, we'll go back a little bit. We'll go back to Hurricane Katrina and about some assurances that casinos wanted. And I've had Fofo Gillis, mayor of Biloxi, on the show, and he's very passionate about this issue, and he's got his point of view about it. And, you know, I respect his passion for it. But there were some promises made after Hurricane Katrina. I want to talk a little bit more about that, and then we'll kind of end it with Secretary of State Michael Watson when we come back. We'll be right back.
now, back to more of the Ricky Matthews Show on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to the Ricky Matthews Show from the Citizens Bank Studio, and we're visiting with Secretary of State Michael Watson. When we went to break, we were talking about a little bit of a rub going on in coastal Mississippi right now about how we should manage tidelands. And listen, what I remember really well, because as the publisher of the Sun Herald, I was also a volunteer chairman of the tourism committee for the Governor's Commission, and I was involved in a lot of the conversations around we needed to move gaming onto land. And so the whole conversation and the legislation that came from that was really, really important in the moment, because the issue was all of these casinos were waiting to determine whether they were going to invest ultimately collectively billions of dollars to rebuild their casinos. Just to give you, I don't know if this number is even right, but $750 million to build the Royal Rivage after Hurricane Katrina. I've heard $750 million to repair it. So we're talking about massive investments, and they needed to have stability in the market. One of the most important things we did in our tourism effort, and I gave tons of speeches related to this, and that is we had to manage the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that existed in our market after Katrina. They wanted to know there was a there. And this was really an important conversation. Jerry St. Pay, as a member of the Gaming Commission, was flying to Las Vegas and meeting with owners, and everyone was involved in some way or another. But the big discussion about the legislation in front of the legislature was, is there a possibility that anything could come out of that would allow gaming in places that are not now legal? Michael described that just a few minutes ago, and that is, before casinos, there were restaurants and there were seafood factories, and there were positions that were south of Highway 90 that did not involve a sand beach, and so the general understanding was that's where future development was going to be allowed. And so this move, the Supreme Court supporting Biloxi and its efforts to want to open it up more, this move goes against those promises made. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just simply stating a fact. And that's true, right, Michael?
Yeah, look, it's all about stability and everybody playing by the same rules. And again, not anti-competitive at all here. But what happened with this decision is basically RW Development now is playing by one set of rules, and every other casino on the coast is playing by a different set of rules. And I just don't think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. So you've got legislation that's in front of the legislature right now. What's that going to do if it passes?
So basically, we're returning tidelands to its historic context, how tidelands were originally supposed to be run. And again, we talk about the small craft harbor piece. So if you're Gulfport or Biloxi or Pascagoula or Long Beach or Pascagoula, whomever, and you've got a small craft harbor, that is state land. Those are public trust tidelands. And then what the city does is it signs a lease with the Secretary of State's office saying, hey, look, there's got to be a conveyance here because it's state property. So Biloxi, Pascagoula, whomever, here's your lease. And under the new provisions with this tidelands law that we're trying to get passed here in 5915.1, basically it says, okay, we're going to give you a minimum lease here, city. You keep all the revenue that you generate from that port, that harbor, whatever your small craft harbor is, as long as it's used for maintenance and upkeep. And oh, by the way, whatever you want to do in that, that's your business, not the Secretary of State's office. So we're actually taking hands off, giving more revenue to these ports and harbors, and that's not being talked about. And I think, unfortunately, here, Ricky, and we've talked about this a little bit, when you have dishonest brokers, folks who are moving the ball, who aren't being honest about certain discussions, that doesn't do anybody any good. And so to scare people and say, hey, the public trust tidelands are going to raise up and eat everybody in Gulfport, that's not true. And I'm not saying that was used, but, that's hyperbole. To say that we're going to take private property, to say that, I'm going to be in charge of every casino and we're going to shut them down, that's ridiculous. That's not what this is about. And we need to make sure that we're being honest with our conversations.
I think the most important thing you said is that, have we created a level playing field? Have we changed the rules? And, we didn't change the rule. The courts changed the rules because of an interpretation, right?
That's exactly right.
What kind of reverberating message did that send? I don't know, because I haven't really talked to some of the major owners on where they are on that.
Well, let's think about this as a business. Not take casinos out of this. Say you got uncertainty. Are you going to invest in your business to make it better? You don't know. You don't know what the future holds. So if you've got stability here, and oh, by the way, let's think about Alabama. Let's think about Florida. Let's think about Georgia, these other states that are trying to get casinos online. If we can't invest in our properties here because we're not sure what the rules are in Mississippi, do you think those properties are going to continue to get better to draw people? No, they're not going to invest their money there. That's the part that gets scary for the industry. If we don't know what we're playing with here, and we're going to have to compete with people in new locations that they never should have been, that's bad for business.
It's an important issue, that's for sure. And we've heard Fofo's very passionate point of view about it, and now we've heard yours. I'm in a position where I was there during a lot of the conversations as it related to Inland Gaming, and I just know the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that existed. I just know. I mean, I literally spoke at the gaming symposium about fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And several of the major players came up to me afterwards and said, man, I had no idea that was going on or this was going on, because we had put so many things in place, working through the Governor's Commission to rebuild trust that we had a plan to help Mississippi come back so they could invest their billions of dollars back in coastal Mississippi. This is an important issue. It really is. Michael, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, my friend.
Thank you, buddy. Look, we're about to put a myth versus fact piece out on this Thailand's bill. So I think it's important for people to read the language and make the decisions for themselves.
Good. This has been Secretary of State Michael Watson. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.